You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
So, David, the other, well, it's been a few months now. Something happened to me, and I found it so interesting. It set me on sort of a mini little intellectual journey. And I found it so fascinating that I really want to talk about it. And I hope others find it as fascinating. And if they don't, well, you know, turn it off. I don't know. But it was just so interesting. Someone on a podcast I was listening to mentioned completely in passing, just a quick throwaway thought, that they had heard that the poem "The Road Not Taken," which I'm sure you're probably familiar with, Robert Frost, that it actually means something completely different than what everybody thinks it means. And then this person said, "Well, but maybe that wasn't true. Maybe I'm confusing it with something else." And I thought, "Oh, they probably are confusing it with something else because it seems pretty straightforward, right? It's the two roads, the quote you always see, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference." You know, you always see that quote places. And it seems to say, you know, I if you take the road less traveled, that less people have been on, that makes a big difference in your life. And it's always one of those inspirational, you know, be a pioneer kind of quotes. But I don't know, just because this person had said that, I can't remember, it was just some podcast I was listening to, I had to look at it, and I read the whole thing. And at first, I read it one time, and I thought, yeah, this is what that means. I mean, this is normal. And then something went off in my brain. I was like, wait a minute, maybe this isn't. And I read it like two more times. And finally, I just took it very slowly, like a line at a time. And I realized it means completely the opposite of what everyone thinks it means when they put that quote on posters and give the quote in speeches for graduations and stuff. And it was so just mind-blowing to me that I'd like to share it because it's quick and hopefully won't be too agonizing if anyone has already read this or is more familiar with it and has already reached this conclusion. So why don't you I don't know. Have you seen that quote places, right?
It's all over the place. I've seen it all the time. It's online. It's in people's dorm rooms. I'm sure there are bumper stickers for it.
And I will freely admit that I just interpreted it as that quote is said. I mean, when you just look at those couple lines, it looks like it means, you know, if you take the road less traveled, then that's a positive thing. Like you should try to be a pioneer. You should try to do things uniquely, you know, like that's how, did you take it that way?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you read the whole thing? It's very short. Why don't you read it and then we'll kind of go through the important bits.
Sure. Sure. So, as Thomas already said, this is "The Road Not Taken" by Robert Frost. "Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry, I could not travel both and be one traveler long I stood, and looking down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grass he had wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no steps had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference."
Yeah, and I got to say, first off, I'm not that big on poetry. I'm not saying I dislike it all or anything, but I usually don't end up being terribly moved by it. But I love this poem; it's really good. And so, do you? I'm wondering, does it strike you what the actual meaning is, David, right away, or?
No, I'm not particularly good at that sort of thing.
Well, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything.
No.
Honestly, and this isn't any sort of contest or anything. It took me the first time I read it, I was like, no, that means what it what it obviously says.
Yeah. Once you mentioned it to me, I read through it a couple of times, and maybe I'm wrong, but there are two lines that I don't understand, and I think they might make a big difference. He says, though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same.
That's a key line there. And that's why that was the first giveaway. And so what he says is like at first he looks at one path and he says, well, you know, that one has the better claim because it looks like maybe it doesn't have as much wear. And then he looks at the other one and he says, well, actually, now that I look at that one, they look about the same. And if you ignore that look about the same line, then it does mean, well, it's important that I took the one less traveled by. But then the important thing is later he says – or sorry, did you want to say the other line that you were confused on?
Well, no. So it was that, and then the next following thing kind of supports, I think, more of what you're saying. He says, and both that morning equally lay and leaves no step had trodden black.
Yeah, and that gave me confusion too, because I think when you look at this poem, if you only have that folk understanding of it, you know, that everybody has from the posters that they've seen, and me too, you are trying to reconcile that in your brain. And I think that took me a while too to see past that and realize, like, wait a minute, there's something different happening here. Yeah, and after going through this myself, I looked up some stuff, and he even said himself, like, oh, yeah, people misinterpret this poem all the time. You have to be careful with that one, I think was the quote. And so I've confirmed it, but I just before looking at anything, I just read it through like really carefully, and it was really fun for me. So what he says here is that he's basically at a crossroads, pretty literally, and he's looking for reasons to go one way or the other. And at first he thinks, oh, this one hasn't been worn as well. Maybe I'll go this way. And then he realizes, no, now that I look at them both, they're pretty much exactly the same. So he makes a decision. The meaning is of this poem is he makes a decision that feels totally arbitrary at the time, because he can't find a way to make a decision. He can't really find any compelling reason to take one road or the other. But as he says here, yet knowing how way leads on to way, that's one of my favorite lines, he doubts if he should ever come back. So his life goes on, and some years down the road, ages and ages hence, he says, he'll be telling someone with a sigh. He'll be telling someone that two roads diverged and he took the one less traveled by, and that's what made the difference in his life. And what the poem is talking about is how we assign meaning to things after the fact that wasn't there at the time. And that's what he's trying to say. It's sort of a critique on how we tend to have all these decisions that happen in our life that could really go either way. But then after the fact, we sort of assign this narrative. That's the word I'm looking for. We sort of assign this narrative to our lives where it may or may not be there at the time. And it's just such a different – it's almost the opposite of what – that line, those last three lines mean when you take it out of context. It really is. Like, it's just completely the opposite of that. And I just found this so interesting. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think that's right. You've convinced me. It's interesting because those last two lines says, I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. People latch on to the less traveled by. Mm-hmm. And it's really just that, like, it's the path that was taken, not that it was less traveled by.
Well, he's misremembering, really, I think. He's misremembering what his reasons were at the time.
Because I was going to ask you, why does he say less traveled by when, if you look at lines 9, 10, and like those next four, he says, you know, I'll read them again, just to be clear. So people listening. He says, though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. Mm-hmm. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden black. So when he's at the crossroads, he's looking down both paths. He doesn't really, like, at first he thinks one of them might be less traveled by than another one, but then he looks again and he says, no, they're both about the same.
What happens, I think, is years later in his life, he only remembers that first thought he has, and he sort of only remembers that as his reasoning. And he says, like, that's what it was. I saw the one less traveled by. And of course this is metaphor. It's not literal. It's metaphor for life decisions, maybe.
Oh, you know, that's actually... That's interesting, because if you take that meaning and you look at the line 14 to 15, it says, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. He could mean that not just come back to the crossroads and have the opportunity to go down the other path as he maybe had originally hoped, but also recognizing that in his future, like the future, he won't be able to come back to that mindset he had when he made that decision. That mindset is, it becomes unavailable to him as the narrative is written in his life as he goes down one path as opposed to the other.
Right. I mean, I think that line is mainly functioning because he says, oh, I kept the first for another day. I mean, it's mainly just to say like, well, I just, you know, I had to pick one and there's, and it I said to myself, well, I'll take the other one someday, but he kind of doubted if he ever would be able to. But you're probably right that there's that's the more abstract meaning of that. I think the literal meaning is just to a device to get him to the choice he has to make. I kind of think. But I could be wrong on that. That's a little more, a little less cut and dry, I think. But yeah, it this blows my mind. I encourage people to go read it. And I found this so enjoyable. And what it made me think of, and the reason I wanted to talk about it, what this made me think of is a broader point of how people have intentions when they write something. I think in art, oftentimes it happens in music too. And in high school, when there we would have to read poetry, there I was always so frustrated, and maybe it was just the teachers I had, but I was so frustrated because their point of view was always, well, however you interpret it is right. That was always the point of view in high school for me. People would talk about a poem, and they'd say, well, I think it means this. And the teacher would say, yeah, that, okay. You know, it's however you want to interpret it. And that always frustrated me so much because – of course, in some sense, that's kind of true. I mean, if you're just consuming, if you're just a consumer of a poem and it's just a entertainment or just a something for you to enjoy, I guess there's no wrong way you want to take it. And in a certain sense, maybe it'll take your mind off things or make you feel a certain emotion. And that might not be wrong. I'm not trying to say that's like a wrong thing to do. But if you want to look at something someone has written, I think people tend to forget, and I'm curious if you agree with me on this, people tend to forget that people have minds, like these authors have minds and intentions, and they don't write something thinking, I'm going to write something ambiguous, and I'm going to make it so that everyone can kind of interpret a bunch of different things from it, and then no one will know what it is. Maybe someone's written a poem like that at some point. But most of the time, like Robert Frost in this case, he has a very specific thought and a feeling that he wants to express, and he expresses it in an incredible way here. And that's something that I think people forget, and it frustrates me. And the way I link it back to atheism, not that it has to, but what it made me think of is how people so often just do the, oh, this part of the Bible is meant to be taken figuratively. Oh, this is, you know, this is just a metaphor. This is just, and I think it's funny because I don't think that's how people write things, you know, like at the time, especially in the Bible, like all the law in the Old Testament that everyone just ignores now. I don't think they were writing that figuratively. I'm pretty sure those people wanted that law and enacted that law and punished people who disobeyed that law. But it's funny that nowadays everyone's able to just say, oh, no, you know, it's just that was metaphorical, it's not real. I don't know. So those are the thoughts I had. And maybe if anyone sort of disagrees with that thought process, at least hopefully what you can get out of this is that this poem doesn't mean what people think it means. It's very different. I encourage everyone to read it.
I'd like to take this time to make a few humble requests of our wonderful listening audience. Please give us a review on iTunes. It helps the show immensely. Also, give us a like on facebook.com/atheisticallyspeaking. And give us a follow on Twitter, username @speakatheism. If an episode sparks a thought or comment, leave it on the Facebook page and the guys might discuss it on the air. Thank you and enjoy the rest of the show.
I disagree with you on some point, but I don't know. I think once I say this, though, I don't know that you would disagree with me anymore. Maybe it's just like a refinement of the point that you've made. So there is a lot of, say, modern art that the purpose of it, I don't mean modern art is like the genre. I guess I should say like art that one can find now, that the purpose of it is to question the meaning of art. And so it might be a painting, or it could be a sculpture, it could be a poem or something. And So I've seen a few things. I can't off the top of my head think of a specific artist or anything, but
yeah, and
art- a few things where you go and see it, and the point is you can interpret it any way you want. And it's challenging the idea that art has to have, like, the artist had to have a specific point in mind
sure.
when they created that piece of art.
That definitely and so, exists.
Yeah, so that exists. So I guess that's just the only thing that I would kind of refine in what you're saying, because I do agree, and I'm just as frustrated by people interpreting something any way they want, regardless of if the author of whatever that thing is had a specific intention.
Right. But I thought of that too, and I think I did sort of mention that, and I agree that there are people who actually an example is John Lennon. Once everyone started misinterpreting his lyrics, you know, like people started looking for deeper meaning and everything. I believe the song, I think it's The Glass Onion. I think it's on the White Album. He specifically wrote it to mean like nothing because he was so sick of people misinterpreting him and like looking for all these deeper things that may or may, you know, that weren't there, that he wrote just nonsense. And so, sure, art is very meta. I mean, you can make art on whatever you want. But a question that comes to mind, like when you talk about a painting or something like that that's meant to challenge our notions of that, is this may seem a little tongue-in-cheek, but how many of those pieces do you think we need? You only need one. I mean, if you're really writing something, you're really creating art that is completely neutral, is completely meant to let anyone take any interpretation they want from it, you'd only need one of that. There's no such thing as like, oh, well, here's that, but there's a different take on it. No, there can't be a different take on it because you're supposed to get whatever you want out of it. So if there's a different take on it, then that's something you're putting into it and you're not supposed to put things into it. You know, like that art at that level to me kind of becomes meaningless. I think that it can pop up occasionally and maybe it makes an important statement sometimes. Maybe it's satirical. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's serious. Maybe it's meant to let people get whatever they want from it. But for me, I mean, you don't need more than one example of that. I mean, it becomes a little worthless. Like imagine a museum full of art where the artist was literally not trying to communicate anything, like was trying to get you it's nothing. You might as well just look at a blank nothing. You might as well look at a wall.
I think more frustratingly it's not only in the realm of kind of fine art like that, but I find it irritating when I think of it as an excuse of, oh well, it's just my interpretation of it is used to get away with lazy thinking.
I was just going to say the exact same thing. Phrase.
People use it to get away with lazy thinking. They use it to get away with faulty reasoning that you've pointed out that they don't want to admit that they were wrong in. You know, oh, well, that's just my interpretation. Or it's, well, let's just agree to disagree. That's the same kind of like, oh, but no, like, come on.
Yeah, I don't
say more than that. Let's talk about more than that. I mean, we can agree that there's no point in arguing about it anymore, but I find that very frustrating about this mindset that you're talking about of interpreting things however you want, and they can mean whatever you want them to mean. It's like, well, no, a lot of times you can't, and sometimes you're just wrong. And if you're wrong, like that sucks, but get over it, I guess.
And I think it's sort of, is the right word, solipsistic? I think it sort of neglects the fact that other people have minds, like Robert Frost. Yeah, I mean, if I were to say to you, no, you can interpret it however you want. Maybe it does mean this. Maybe it does mean, it's like, that sort of negates – it's sort of disrespectful to him, I think. I mean, he had a – maybe sometimes things are written in such a manner that it's not clear, like that the artist did a poor job, or maybe they just – their thinking was so different that they weren't able to express their point of view. And that could happen. Maybe it's just unintelligible. But if you take the attitude that it means whatever you want, I mean, I've personally – if I were Robert Frost – and I wrote this amazing poem and people had that mindset, I would be frustrated. I would say, no, I had an intention, and my intention was to show how faulty our memory can be sometimes. I mean, there's a lot of little intentions in there that it's okay if you don't get every single little emotion and thought that he meant to, you know, convey. I mean, sometimes you just, you know, you're speaking slightly different languages, you don't get it. But the broader meaning there, I think, is very good, and it's a great point. And I would be frustrated if I were him and people took the attitude that you could interpret it however you want. And I think you're totally right. I was going to say the same thing. It's sort of lazy thinking that people want to get away with. and it frustrates me a little bit.
I think there's also a temptation to, so reading this poem and seeing, you know, oh, it has a different meaning and maybe I've been interpreting it incorrectly, to think that, okay, if I've been interpreting it correctly, then the way I was interpreting it is a bad idea. I think people maybe make that jump sometimes.
Sure.
That they really find it encouraging and uplifting to think two roads diverged in a wood and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. You know, oh, I should take the road less traveled and that'll, you know, lead me to being a happier person. And so when you come and say, oh, that's not actually what that poem means, they yeah. may make the faulty kind of jump to like, oh, so I'm not going to be happy if I take the road less traveled. Like, you think that's a bad idea? Are you criticizing the way I live my life? When in reality, like, you're not criticizing that at all. You're not saying anything yeah, about that idea that, because the poem isn't saying anything about that necessarily. And so I think that's part of the tendency of why people will hold on to it, even if they've got reason to see that, oh, it actually maybe meant something different.
Yeah. And just a couple more things I was going to say on it. I think in music, another thing that happens, because I do music a little bit, and you see a lot of times when people are being interviewed about their lyrics, and someone will ask them, I've seen this countless times, someone will ask them, what does this song mean? They'll say, well, it means whatever you want it to mean. And I'm not trying to say that they have no right to say that. I mean, of course they can say that. And some songs are different because a lot of the emotion comes from music, which is far less tangible. I mean, it's a lot harder to say, I have a very, very specific point I'm trying to get across in these musical notes, you know, like that's a little more, there's definitely more room for however the music happens to sweep you away, however it happens to make you feel. I mean, that's okay. That might be a different story. I think that most, and any good lyricist, I think, has a very specific point, or maybe not a point, but they're trying to accomplish an emotion. They're trying to get you to feel something specific when they write a song. And I think they answer that way. I think they say it's okay to take whatever you want from it, because the last thing they want to do is shut down anyone who's enjoying their music. I think that's a part of that. And so music's a little different. But what frustrates me about it, and we've already kind of touched on this, but a more specific point is, I think that one thing that a lot of people do poorly sometimes, and I constantly am trying to improve upon myself, is to realize agency in other people, and like when you're thinking, like say it's your workplace, you're thinking like, wow, why did this person do that? Like, you know, why is my supervisor doing the such and such? Why is this, you know, you need to try, if you want to be successful, I think you need to try to get in other people's minds sometimes. I mean, not in a fictional, like, profiler kind of weird way, but you do need to try to see things from other people's point of view. Because people, I think that, duller people tend to be satisfied with explanations of other people's behavior that are just insane. That if they really believe that, if they really were acting this way because of the reasoning you've assigned to them, they would be insane. And I think that's a weakness that some people have. And I there's just a lot that I got out of this poem that I learned from this experience that I wanted to convey here. And to finally sort of bring it home, when, as someone who does try to create art from time to time, and if there's any songwriters, writers of any kind, people, artists who listen to the show, I'd be curious if you do disagree with me, I'd be very curious to hear why. But when I'm trying to write something, what happens? I think of a feeling I'm trying to convey, and I go from there. You know, music, like I said, a little differently, but lyrics or writing, you're trying to convey something. So when you go to Robert Frost's poem and you tell me that it's however you interpret it is fine, you're not getting into his head at all. You're not taking an accurate view of his agency. He didn't have these words come to him randomly. He's like, let me think of some random, you know, words that people can misinterpret. Like, that's just not how people act. That's not how they do things in their life. Unless you're talking about the specific little examples that, you know, you brought up, David, that sometimes can happen. But for the most part, in literature and poetry, that's just not how it goes. People think of things and then they try to convey them. So that's all I wanted to say on that.
Well, I guess the one thing I did think about when you were talking about respecting other people's agency, there is, I'm sure there's a specific word for this, but there's a tendency for us to think of our own, say, bad decisions that we've made as being circumstantial. Like, I made this bad decision because of the circumstances.
Yeah, I was in a hurry.
In a hurry. But when other people do something we don't like, man, that's a part of their personality. That's who they are.
That's true.
We see ourselves as, you know, having agency and reasons for doing things in a totally different way than we see the agency and reasons for other people. And that's, I think that's kind of getting at what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think we've read the exact same thing. What was that? That's totally true. And that's something that I could definitely get better at. I mean, I think it is important when someone cuts you off or something. I mean, sometimes they are just inconsiderate, but whenever you do something, especially traffic wise, I mean, when you do something, when you cut somebody off, you're like, well, I'm in a hurry. Sorry. I got to, I'm just trying to get where I'm going, you know, and someone else does it. You're like, fuck you. I can't believe it. You know.
Well, I think of it in two ways. I think of it as like being a little bit more forgiving of other people when they make bad decisions, but also giving myself fewer justifications for bad decisions. Like, I'm not going to let myself get away with driving like an asshole because I'm in a hurry. Yeah. It affects other people, you know, and I should realize that. Or I'm not going to kind of be lazy at my job because I'm tired, because, you know, it does affect other people and I shouldn't let myself use that as a crutch for bad decisions.
Yeah,
so I kind of see it's thinking that in like both ways. You can improve your thinking and your actions in both ways. So here we have a comment by Duff on Facebook. This is for episode 9, Purpose and Meaning. Says, I don't have the problem some atheists seem to have with this topic. I question how many of us do have a problem with there being no meaning in life. There is no meaning to life. It's all a balance of just surviving and being as happy as possible. It seems to have been implied that religious people are happy because they have meaning in their lives. I question that assumption. I question the studies that say religious people are happier than non-believers. I think that while we might see things differently and draw happiness from things at different rates, we also speak a different language and answer questions differently.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good comment. And it's something that I'm not sure we fully talked about. I think that when we're having this discussion, especially you and I, David, we're kind of talking about the purpose and meaning one was a pretty personal one, I think. I think it's hard to speak, and we mentioned this, it's hard to talk about everyone's inner, you know, sense of purpose and sense of meaning. So I don't think that you or I ever said that religious people are more happy in general. I think I only said that if I were religious, I think I would be more happy. Like if I somehow could sincerely believe that there's a God and that when we die, we go to heaven or there's any sort of afterlife, I think I would be a little happier personally. Of course, that doesn't make it true or anything, but I don't mean that. So I think I should clarify. I don't think that means that everyone who's religious is happier, because different people allow their beliefs to function in different ways. I think there are a lot of people who mark religious on the census or whatever it is, or a poll, who just don't even think about it. And who knows if those people are happy? It seems like their happiness is not even a function of their religion or not, you know, it's, or their belief or their lack of belief. They might just have whatever life they have, and they happen to mark that box because that's how they were raised. But they, you know, so in terms of polling, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's right. Especially, I really liked the point where he says we also speak a different language and answer questions differently, because to me, For some people, I think if you ask them, are you religious? Yes, no. Do you believe that life has meaning? Yes, no. I will probably, it depends on how I thought they mean meaning. But I might check no on that. You know, maybe life doesn't have any grand meaning. But they might, so someone that's like true. Me reading that, I wouldn't see that as like, oh, that's a really sad existence and what a depressed person. That's not how I read that. But someone who thinks differently than I do, other atheists, you know, yourself maybe, or certainly I think religious people would be more likely to read a response like that as someone who isn't as happy. it implies not happy. And so that's where the speaking a different language is very important.
Mm, yeah, that's
and it's, so it's something we talked about very briefly once before. And I think I was me that made the point, maybe you did, that you could talk about love in, like, let's say we understood the, you know, all of the mechanisms of the brain that bring about the sense of love. And you could talk about it in terms of atoms moving and this neuron does that and this chemical does that. And really just kind of do a great job of stripping it of all of the things that we care about it using that language. Or you could talk about love using metaphor and poetry or, you know, an image or in other kinds of language and really capture what it is that you're trying to say. And the language that you use and your interpretation of that language is so important in a situation like this, especially when you're talking about happiness of non-believers as compared to believers, because I think he's absolutely right. I think the language is very different. And sometimes in ways that we might not even expect, we might think that, oh, that's kind of, everyone would see this the way that I see it, but I don't think that's always the case.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's a very good comment. No meaning to life, it's balance of just surviving, being as happy as possible. I kind of said that. Like I said, just to reiterate, I don't think we implied, or maybe we accidentally did, but I don't think we meant to imply that religious people are more happy in general. I think that for me, I do think I'd be happier if I could somehow have that belief. But like we said, I mean, people are speaking different languages. We don't know how much these beliefs function in each person's life. So that's a good comment, though. I don't think we've had a comment from him before, and I'm looking forward to more.
Yeah, and in general, we got a lot of good comments on that episode.
Yeah, so we did.
We appreciate them. Hope to get more, and keep them coming.